Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the New Hollywood Podcast. It's just Dino Ray Ramos right now because Amanda is not here.
I'm not going to do my Amanda impression.
But David's here, though. Amanda is living her fabulous life in Portugal. I'm all telling her business. But this week's episode, we have JD Pardo, who is the star of Mayans MC, which premieres tonight because we're dropping this. It's September 4th.
I wanted to know, my burning question going into the podcast was, what does MC stand for? You find out in this episode.
Did you watch it?
No, I'm saying you find out in the episode that we recorded right here.
JD, he had some interesting things to say.
He had a different opinion than I think a lot of the guests that come on here do.
And I appreciate it. It wasn't bad. You know, it was very thoughtful in how he framed his view on inclusion and diversity. You know, and it was very. I was kind of impressed. I mean, not saying that he's not impressive, but I was just like, makes you think.
No, yeah, he did give at least me something different to think about, just sort of like another side of the same side, if that makes any sense. You'll hear it in the interview. I thought it was
his character on Mayans, his name is Easy, but his real name is like Ezekiel, but they call him Easy. I missed an opportunity to call him Eazy-E throughout.
I don't think you missed that opportunity. I think that was a good thing that you didn't do that.
I mean, I'm just a vessel of bad jokes, but JD was awesome. He's also been, he was in Twilight, the second part of Breaking Dawn. He was in, I think, the Hulu series East Los High. And in Mayans, which you'll see tonight if you watch on FX, it's his character. I can't really say anything. I mean,
that's what, you said this all throughout the show. I can't say anything. I can't say anything because it's just crazy. The first episode, so much stuff goes down.
Yeah, there's a lot packed in.
You have to watch it.
Well, David, you haven't seen it yet.
No.
Yeah, but it appears tonight, so you'll watch it.
I will watch it.
I've seen it, and I actually watched it multiple times because there are things that you'll miss and that I missed. And plus, I'm pretty slow to catch on things, so I had to watch it multiple times. But anyways, without further ado, here is JD Pardo. I guess we always just kind of start with like an origin story with our guest and like what made you want to become an actor and performer and kind of who were some of your role models coming up?
So as a child, I was always fascinated by movies. You know, you go into the movie theater and during that time it was an experience, right? And I was fascinated with like Indiana Jones and Jaws and these great movies. And I just was so taken by the world. And, you know, then my parents started to have some problems, and my mother on Fridays used to take my sisters and I to the video store to rent. We each got to pick a movie. And
when video stores existed.
When video stores existed, right. We would pick a movie, and then we'd flip a coin, and then we'd, have to, see who went first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like my sister would get like Anne of Green Gables or
something
Ice
like that.
Castles. I'd get like Karate Kid or something. And I'd have to sit through all of them, and I watched all of them, and I just loved them. I loved all of them. I mean, I have Anne of Green Gables in my collection now. I was just so fascinated. I wanted to do that. And then around 13, my parents split up. My dad had left, and I was just so heartbroken over it, and I was really angry. And I discovered a theater class when I was 15. At Van Nuys High, I took this theater class, and I can't describe to you what I felt. I just knew at that point I had this desire to express everything that I was feeling, and it gave me an opportunity to be anybody else but me. And that's what I wanted in a very weird way, right? And so then when I was like 17, I came out. It felt like coming out to my parents and letting them know that I wasn't going to go to school.
I want to be an actor. coming out of the actor closet.
Coming out of the actor closet, man. You know, everyone's saying you can't do it. You can't do it. No one makes it. You know, it's But that's what I did. And then from there, I found a manager that took me under their wings and just taught me about the auditioning process. And I was already, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to go to some great school. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the money for it, and I just didn't know how to get there from Panorama City. So I just studied actors and watched great movies and watched like behind the scenes and read interviews and just like I'm just watching tape over and over and over and why they're doing certain things, why actors are making certain choices, and just being fascinated by it. And that's how I built my craft, you know. And then it's been a 16-17 year road mm-hmm. long road to get to this point, and now I'm here.
Yeah. Oh wow! It's been
so there's there's my acting backstory with a lot of stuff left out just for time.
Were there certain like actors you looked up to?
Oh yeah, everybody. Yeah. I looked up to Clark Gable because Clark Gable, I had read somewhere that he had sort of like a higher pitched voice, and he really had to work on his voice and bringing it down.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, it's work. Mm. It's work.
You
like, they're not just perfect.
Yeah.
You know? You know, obviously James Dean and Marlon Brando and Dustin Hoffman, Benicio del Toro. I mean, you name them. I can, Daniel Day-Lewis. And he's probably the one that I wanted to approach my work like Daniel Day, because I love life. I love people. And that's what fascinates me, is to create a character, to get in there and to play with my voice, to play with my body, to really create a character, to entertain people so that they don't see me.
Yeah.
They see the character.
Yeah. So you have like kind of an extensive resume right now. You were in the Twilight Saga, you were in East Los High, but we're here mostly to talk about Mayans MC. It's in the Kurt Sutterverse.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's a thing. I just coined that right now. and it's a kind of a spinoff of Sons of Anarchy. And Sons of Anarchy was very like kind of embedded in like this Hamlet and leather and that kind of, there's something very Shakespearean about it. But Mayans MC is kind of, I watched the first episode, and it's a totally different story. And I remember seeing you guys at the ATX Festival, TV Festival, and Kurt Sutter was like, we do not want this to be a Latino Sons of Anarchy.
Right.
But what would you say is kind of the central theme of Mayans? And also just talk about who you play.
Well, I'll start with that because that's a little easier than the central theme. I play Easy Reyes. I guess you can say he's the protagonist of Mayans MC, and he was a golden boy in his community. He was he's super intelligent, going to Stanford, and has this photographic memory. Has his high school sweetheart, just enjoying life, and a tragic event happens, and it lands him in prison. Mm-hmm. And he spends years in prison, and when he comes out, that's where the pilot starts, is that he's a prospect of the Mayans MC. You're right. It is very different. It's Jax Teller with Sons of Anarchy was interesting because there was like this fantasy element to it, right? There was you're just all automatically, here's this motorcycle club and they are the kings. Mm-hmm. The Charming is their kingdom, and Jax Teller is the prince of Charming. And I mean, he's riding in town with this smile and the cigarette, and you know, he goes in town and buys a box of condoms. I think that happens like within the first 5 minutes. Yeah. Who wouldn't love that, right?
Yeah.
And Easy is a prospect.
Yeah.
Starting at the ground level. Not only that, he never wanted to be a part of the club.
Yeah.
This isn't something where he was handed down anything he didn't have any dream to be part of the club. He wanted to be far away from that world as possible. So he's forced. His hand is forced in this one. As far as central themes go, you know, you brought up the Shakespearean, you know, aspect to
the Sons, yeah,
to the Sons of Anarchy. And I think with Mayans, you know, Kurt was really interested, and he would talk to me about this, that he was interested in how somebody who is super smart, not involved in like the crime world, mm-hmm. What happens when they are a part of it?
Yeah.
What happens when you have somebody that intelligent mm-hmm. leading a group? And so we're going to see that journey.
Yeah.
But it almost reminds me of The Godfather.
Yeah.
You know, there's this element to that where it's like Michael Corleone, who was a military man and going to school. His dad wanted him to be a lawyer for the family, mm-hmm. but he didn't want to be a part of the family because he knew how bad the family was and what they did. So I think in the same way, this is, you find that Easy's an outsider who's being forced, he's being pulled into the Mayans MC through his brother, who's a patched member, but also, and you saw the first pilot.
Yeah,
there are rules.
Yeah,
there's certain forces that
you
are.
You can't talk about the first episode without giving a lot away.
You can't, right?
Yeah, because when I was watching, there's like twists and turns and surprises, and the only thing you could say is that you're in this motorcycle club. That's it.
Right.
And right. Shit happens.
Yeah, exactly.
There's this kind of constant conversation right now. You know, of course, we're New Hollywood and we talk about inclusion and diversity in TV and film. It's so interesting to me, the Latino representation in Mayans, but not only in Mayans, but in, you know, what's going on with, you know, Hollywood in general. What is your take on Latino representation today in TV and film, and how has it changed since you've been in the industry?
You know what's really interesting about, I get asked this all the time, and yeah. I do respect it. I respect where it comes from because of the time that we're in.
Yeah, it's,
you know, there's a political atmosphere where everything across the media and just what you read, everything has just become black and white. You're either on this side or you're on that side. Mm-hmm. If you support this, then you don't support that.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
And I try not to get involved in that because I don't believe in that. I don't believe things are just so black and white. For me as an actor, this has been very hard mm-hmm. to take on because I'm an actor first. I'm mm-hmm. an artist. Right. I always have been. This diversity push wasn't happening when I started acting. Mm-hmm. In fact, I didn't know racism until I entered Hollywood. So I find it kind of funny that Hollywood's trying to do something about it.
Yeah.
And it almost makes me feel cheapened. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, people are saying, it almost comes across as if like, oh, there's this diversity push, so that's why we got Mayans. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always just been an actor trying to be the best actor in the room. Mm-hmm. I've never, I've played Caucasian mm-hmm. roles. I've played Jewish roles. I've played half black, half white roles. I've played Mexican roles. I've played Puerto Rican roles. I've played everything. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden there's like a label that's being stamped on my head and I'm supposed to check some diversity box or yeah. something like that. So on one end, it's really hard for me mm-hmm. because back then you could just call your representation and say, hey, so-and-so is, like for Spider-Man, for example, with Tobey Maguire. So yeah. I found out that this was coming out. I didn't care what my ethnicity was. I wanted to audition for it.
Yeah.
And guess what? I didn't care that Toby had an offer for it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to audition yes. for it. Why? Because it was an opportunity to get into Sony. Mm-hmm. It was an opportunity to get into the room, to be put on tape by a casting director who had no idea who I was. Mm-hmm. And that's how you created relationships.
Yeah, yeah.
Today, if I tried making that call today, oh, no. The lead is we have a special role for the Latino yeah. actors. It's called Roberto. And Roberto is a strong role, not big, but he's got 5 lines. And somehow it blows my mind that people are excited about that.
Yeah.
It's given you a place. It's shown you exactly where you are on that ladder.
Yeah.
You know, so there's no where I feel like a lot of art is lost, a lot of the craft is lost, a lot of that networking is lost, where you can meet a casting director. If you're not right for something, you can meet directors, build those relationships. That's all gone.
Yeah.
Because guess what? If you're not Latino and it's not a Latino role, you're not getting in that room. Mm-hmm. So that is one side of it. The other side of it is that it is giving people a lot of opportunity out there that didn't have the opportunity. And when I think about, you know, I was talking to some of people on my team, and we were talking about, like, just making a joke about, like, all the Chris's, right?
Like, oh, yeah, like Chris, like Pratt, Chris Pine.
Chris Pine, Chris Pratt, Chris Hemsworth, all this stuff. And it was something that Kurt Sutter said in an interview. He said when he was auditioning for Mayans that there was a limited pool of Latino actors to look at. And I said, why? Why is there a limited pool? He said, well, there's because the talent level is just not there. And like, why? There's so many of us, though. We're all over the place. I see them constantly at auditions. But then it hit me. It's the lack of opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you have all these Chris's, because there's an opportunity out there for all these Chris's. There isn't all these opportunities for Latino actors. And you need to work. That's how you build relationships. That's how you hone in on your craft, because there's a lot of distractions on set. You learn about the camera. You learn about staying in character. Directors work with you, and then they want to give you another job. So it is so complicated that I just know how I feel about it. I just don't have the answers.
No, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, like, I see both sides of what you're saying. I mean, the Latino community is not just one community. That's the thing. It's like, it's with, like, Asian Americans, too. And, you know, you can't have a unifying story telling, you know, one Asian story, same with Latinos.
Right.
And it's about opportunity. But I totally see where you're coming from. It's kind of like the whole tokenism thing versus, you know, opportunity.
Yeah.
That kind of, there's this fine line between the two that you can't really explain.
It's really hard. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm 100% Latin. My father's Argentinian. My mother's El Salvadorian. I'm an artist, I'm an actor, I'm a storyteller, and I was doing this before that stuff was coming out. And now all of a sudden it's placed this label upon me, and whether it's fair or not fair, I have to respect it, and it's forcing me to figure out how to take action with it now, you know?
Well, it's like, it's like Mayans is bringing a different narrative to the table.
Absolutely.
Which is really good, because... And I really liked at ATX when Kurt was just like, this is not a Latino Sons of Anarchy. And it shows in the first episode, like, right off the bat. So, it's really embedded in the Latino community, and there's even the imagery, you know, has a Dia de los Muertos kind of feel to it. It's still not a Latin show. If that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
No, because I think what we want to do is... What I feel like makes this sequel so interesting is that it is still the same world, the Sons of Anarchy. It just really feels like the camera lens has now shifted over from the Sons of Anarchy to the Mayans.
Yeah.
So with that, you are going to get there's a cultural difference there, right? The language is different. The cartels that we're dealing with are different.
But it's still dangerous, and there's a lot of shooting.
There's a lot of guns, a lot of action. There's great bikes, you know. And we're not trying to make. And Kurt said it so well that, you know, and I'm going to butcher it, but we're not trying to make any sort of statement here. This isn't like FX said, oh, we need to check the diversity box, so let's go ahead and make Mayans. This is Sons of Anarchy was an extremely successful show series. And there is a hunger out there for that to continue. And that's where you're getting Mayans. And it's within the storytelling. So we want to create a great story and great characters so that regardless of your race, you're tuning in and you're watching and you're being interested. You know, you're interested in the story.
Yeah. What are you currently binge watching, or what have you been binge watching?
The last series I binge watched is probably Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wait, was it like you just sat through the whole thing?
No, just the last season.
Okay.
Although the last four seasons.
Who do you think's gonna take the Iron Throne, or who do you want to take?
Originally, I wanted Khaleesi too, but she really pissed me off with that whole like bend the knee. Like it was some bend the knee. What is that? Bend the knee. Are you kidding me? So I was like, go Jon Snow, man. He's not gonna bend the knee.
Well, yeah.
What is that all? What? I don't care if she's the queen. Where is that ego? The knee.
My problem with her is that like she's constantly reminding us that she has dragons, and we're like, oh, we get it. You have your dragons. Yeah. You're powerful. Yeah. Well, one of them's not. That one of them got jacked up, but still.
Yeah.
Okay. So, on my ends, you're actually riding a motorcycle.
Right.
We could go into how your training went into that and whatever, but let's say someone like me who's never ridden a motorcycle before, or anyone else, any of our listeners, what kind of advice would you give someone who is like, oh, I want to buy a motorcycle and become one of these people, or like, you know, be a motorcycle rider? What kind of advice would you give?
Well, you could definitely do it because I did it.
Yeah.
I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
And
you look comfortable on
I feel great. Yeah. I feel great on a bike now. Part of that is just being an actor and you know, knowing that I have to really believe it and knowing that I have there's a whole like, you know, motorcycle culture out there that really is into the show and you know, they don't want to find out that I'm being pulled on some sort of trailer.
Do you have a motorcycle, like an actual?
For me, in my home, no, okay. I don't. Since I started on the show learning how to ride, I figured that I would let this go for, you know, if we get picked up for a second season, then I will be getting a bike.
Okay.
Absolutely. But I would just tell the listeners that, I mean, the only thing I know is just doing what I did, which is go to a Harley shop. They have Harley school. Uh-huh. I did that for a weekend. It's not that expensive. Uh-huh. It's a Saturday and Sunday course. You spend half the day in a classroom and then the second half of the day in a parking lot working with cones and going over like what you're going to be tested on. And then at the end of that weekend, you take your permit test. Uh-huh. So now you have your permit and then you can just make an appointment at the DMV and just take a written test. You don't have to take the actual physical test anymore. And there you go. You are licensed.
You're a licensed
hop on that
motorcyclist.
Bike. Yeah. Just not in LA. LA's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. So another question. So you're banished to a deserted island, right?
Okay.
You are only allowed one item of food that will last you forever and one movie. What are those two things?
One item of
food. Like one food that you'll eat. But they'll keep delivering it to you on a monthly basis.
They'll keep delivering it to you.
Whoever this person put you on, this desert. And in one movie, there's a DVD player, and then you only are allowed one DVD.
Oh, man. But can I... I won't get sick?
No, you won't get sick.
Like, from eating the same food over and over again?
Well, yeah, no, you won't get sick.
Okay, so then it would probably be... man...
It could be anything.
Probably sushi.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, but that's why I want to make sure I don't get poisoned. Like, mercury poisoning.
Fine. The sushi will be, you know, bought in from a very reliable place.
Like, whoever I want it from. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that and then...
That's a good answer because... Okay, good. Because it's a variety. So,
yeah. There's a bunch of fish.
I didn't specify.
You didn't specify.
And then one movie.
And then one movie.
That you'll watch for a lifetime. Only one.
I guess the movie that I would watch, I would say Jaws. I would
watch
that.
And you'd be on a
recently.
Deserted island.
Yeah. Yeah.
That fish theme. Oh, it is like a fish theme.
Hey, it is fish theme. Look at that.
You did that without knowing.
I guess we're going to sushi.
I was craving sushi the other night and I ordered a bunch. And then when it finally came, I wasn't hungry. I don't know. So our last question is there, we ask this to all our guests, is there an underrepresented actor, a voice in the industry, producer, storyteller, you know, that is doing awesome things that you want to give a shout out to that isn't getting recognition, that isn't in the mainstream?
I don't know the specifics on this guy too much, just because, I mean, we worked together. On my ends, he's a big part of it, Richard Cabral.
Oh, yeah.
You know, first of all, he's such an amazing talent. And just his story where he, you know, from prison to Hollywood and the life that he was living, to now. I mean, he's such a soulful man, and he does a lot for the community, mm-hmm. you know, and this is something that's really been on my heart lately because of the position that I've been put in with Mayans and like what we discussed earlier with yeah. diversity, yeah. you know, I'm asking myself, well, what can I do? Mm-hmm. But, how do I sort of pay it forward? How do I help out the youth yeah. or other actors? And Richard does a lot with, gangs. He works at, does a lot of work at Homeboy Industries. He also, he goes to prisons and he talks to inmates there. Mm-hmm. And he also, has like an open mic poetry reading, whatever you want to do as an artist, whatever, just come show up,
yeah,
and
yeah.
just get it out. And I'm just so impressed with this guy and everything that he does. Cause I've always felt like I've had to be put into a position where, oh, somebody will actually care what I have to say,
yeah.
or I have to have money to create sort of these foundations or whatever it is to give back. And he just does it, mm-hmm. you know, he just does it. So
cool.
Check that guy out.
Yeah. And what's his character's name on the show?
Coco.
Coco. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's an awesome cast, including you. And yeah, JD, thank you so much for stopping by September 4th.
Thank you, boys.
Yeah.
Bend the knee.
Bend the knee. Thank you so much, JD. Thanks.